afternoon. Thanks for coming back and listening so soon. Bring in the stories of everyday folks while you sit back, relax, have a whisk, coach. Here we go with the Trend Speak podcast, bringing you insight or bringing a laugh. Here's the man who might have a plan. Give it up for your host, Trent Pod Scaland.
Look at that, two podcasts in 1 week for you. I wanted to make sure to get this episode out to you sooner rather than later because there is a free promo for next week that this week's guest is advertising with in the episode, and I wanted to make sure that you all as listeners could take advantage of that. So without any further ado, I introduce this week's episode. Stay tuned as well. I'll be back on Monday for another Trent Speaks podcast. Enjoy this week's guest. I don't really know what to say. Usually I say another guest, another week. I'm giving up on trying to figure out a new way to introduce guests. So I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to butcher it, but I'm going to try it anyway. Adrian.
Yes, you totally nailed it. See, you can remember it because I'm odd. So it's Adrian. See?
I had to like even just stare at the way that I wrote it down for a second. It's like I'm still overthinking it. And maybe that's what it is. People overthink it.
Exactly. It's French. It's actually Adrien. So if you meet an actual French person, that's how they'll say it. But I go with Adrien because it's a nice compromise.
Well, it sounds way cooler when you say it that way.
I think so.
Plus, you know how to actually say it, so it makes it, you can actually say it cool, unlike me. Welcome into the podcast. What an intro.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Perfect. So sometimes it's easiest just for me to kind of start out with a nice broad question, and we can branch off as we go. Yeah. But what's your story? What is it that you've been through, you've experienced? What brought you to the podcast?
Yeah. So the thing that brought me specifically to this podcast, the story that brought me here, is that I escaped not just an abusive marriage, but an abusive pattern that I discovered over time. I was getting myself into over and over and over again. And it took me a while to kind of notice it. And it took me even longer to break it. But I am so happy that I did the work to get through that and get to a place where now I have healthy boundaries and healthy relationships, because man, it has made such a huge difference in every aspect of my life.
Well, and I'm sure that's difficult to not only recognize, but also come to terms with when you're in that type of a situation too.
Oh yeah. So one of the things I really like to point out to people, because I think there's this kind of attitude of, oh, if I was in that situation, I would know what to do, or I would handle it this way, or I would just leave, or blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you, you have no idea what you would do. You just have no idea what you would do. Because once you find yourself in that situation, first of all, it's so surprising to find yourself in that situation and look around and go, how did I get in this pot of boiling water? Right? Everyone's so shocked. I was that girl that would like march over to my friend's house when she, you know, was having an argument with her boyfriend and be like, that's it, we're leaving. And I would start throwing her stuff into a bag and be like, you're coming to my house. So I never expected to be the person who was saying, no, I'm not going anywhere. I need to, you know, fix this myself. But there I was. And so when you find yourself in that situation and you realize how deep you are into that situation and how difficult it is to extricate yourself from that situation, it can feel really, you can feel really ashamed. There's a lot of shame that kind of goes along with it, and it keeps you stuck in it, that shame. And so I think the most important message that I can convey to anyone who finds themselves in that situation is get past that shame. It's not your fault. Get to the point where you can ask someone that you trust for help, because you cannot get out of a situation like that alone. It is almost impossible to do.
Well, and there are probably a lot of times too, at least in my opinion, it's hard to say because I have not been in a situation like that, but I would imagine that the thought would be when people are maybe saying, I recognize this, well, no, it's not happening to me. And almost like a form of denial in a way.
Oh, yes. That, yes.
Like, there's no way.
Yeah. There, it's big, big denial. It's funny. So my sister just read my book, which is called Melting Ivory, Life Happens For You, Not To You. She stayed up all night, you know, reading the book, couldn't stop. And then she called me at about 6 o'clock in the morning. And she said, how did I not know? Am I just an idiot? Like, did I just not see it? And I said, no, Kat, listen, I didn't know. I didn't know it was happening to me. I pretended it wasn't happening to me. And I convinced myself it wasn't happening to me because he convinced me it wasn't happening to me, right? He's gaslighting me and telling me this is not what's happening. Wait, you know, don't look at the man behind the curtain. And so I was convinced that I was just misunderstanding things and that it would, you know, eventually become clear. And it did, of course, eventually become clear that I was in an abusive relationship. But at the time, I was just so upside down. Like, I didn't know which way was up, honestly.
So what is it? Is it that you had started to kind of recognize some patterns or people were kind of pointing them out to you? How did you come to the realization that like, yeah, like I'm in a bad situation right now?
So there were several things that happened, actually. It was kind of a series of events. And, you know, often this is what happens is it escalates little by little. Because what happens is they push, right? And then, you know, you kind of lose ground. And then they just take up that space. And then you're new in a new place. And then they can push further. You see? And so as soon as your boundary gets trampled and you don't just leave right then, they know they can push your boundary further. And they do. And so it happens little by little. It's rarely like, you know, one big dramatic event. But in my case, there were actually several dramatic events. The first one was when he threatened me with a knife. And that was a situation where I felt like I was in the wrong. I was ashamed. And so I just sort of capitulated and, you know, gave him everything he asked for and was like, I'm so sorry. I'm a terrible person. You're right. And then later he tried to kill me again, this time with a pillow. He tried to smother me with a pillow.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And in that situation, it got really weird. And I don't want to kind of give away the climax of the book. So you'll have to read that, you know, the book to find out what happened there and how I survived, because obviously I'm here telling you this story. So right. I did in fact survive. But what happened after that was really interesting because I got kind of bold after that, after surviving that, I think. And a friend of mine came over and she was standing outside and my ex, he didn't know that she was out there. And so I came inside and I said that I was going to stay the night at her house. And he just got this look on his face like, what are you talking about? Of course, you're not going to spend the night at somebody else's house. And he said, no, tu vas pas. Like, no, you're not going to do that. And I said, what? Je vais? Like, yes, I'm going. And he grabbed this book and just threw it at me and I ducked and it hit the wall. And my friend, of course, heard this big like boom against the wall. And so she came right over by the door. And so she heard him start screaming at me in French. She didn't understand what he was saying, but she knew that like, this was not, you know, normal. This is not a normal way to treat your spouse, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to hear the threatening words that he's screaming at me to know that these are threatening words. And so as I walked out of the apartment, he follows me out just screaming at me, you know, in French that if I come back, he's going to kill me. He's going to kill my family. And there's Heather. And so it was like this split second change where he's like, Heather, hi, how are you? You look so nice today. And she's just like, what am I seeing right now? And so, you know, that moment, her witnessing that moment was such an important shift for me because then I had a witness. I wasn't crazy. Mm-hmm. I wasn't making this up in my head. This happened and she saw it. And so as we left, you know, she's saying to me, like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I had no idea that this was happening. And so I'm going, you know what? I didn't either. Like, tell me more. What's happening? And so she said, you know, I think I said, I'm sorry. Like, I apologized. And she looked at me and she said, you are not responsible for his behavior. And I was like, whoa, whoa. I didn't realize that. I'm not responsible for his behavior. Wow. And I was learning so much that day. And then she said something about, you know, they're often very charming in public. And it was the fact that she used the word they, that she contextualized it as people who act like this, as in abusers. And he had sort of been categorized by someone other than myself as being abusive. And so I finally was able to kind of go, yeah, yeah, that's what's happening, right? And so that was the beginning of the end for me. And I started to work my way out at that point because I finally had help and I had a witness and I had someone who would tell me from an objective standpoint that, yes, you're really experiencing this. Because it's amazing how when you're being gaslit like that, how much you doubt your own reality and your own perception of what's going on. It's terrifying.
Well, and you're able to be very open about this right now and everything and kind of laugh at some of it looking back on it. What was it like in the moment though?
Oh God.
Or even just like right after the fact that you realized like this is what's happening to me. What did that feel like? Did it take a while for you to kind of repair all that damage that had been done?
Oh, years, years. It took years. It took therapy. It took friends. It took, you know, a lot of changes to my life. Because like I said, this was part of a larger pattern. It wasn't just him, you know, I was the common denominator in a lot of situations where I found myself a victim. And I realized that that was a comfortable place for me. I had been abused as a kid. And so I saw this as my comfort zone, my normal. And so I sought out people who treated me that way. And I didn't do it on purpose and I didn't do it consciously, but I fell right into that pattern over and over again. And so realizing that I had gone this far into a situation like that where my life was actually in danger was this really big wake-up call that I needed to change this pattern permanently across my entire life. And I needed to get strong boundaries and I needed to start to trust myself, which was the hardest part, was to trust my own judgment and to stop trying. Here's what I had been doing over and over. I had been saying to someone else, here's my boundary, please keep it safe for me. Instead of saying, here's my boundary and I am going to keep it safe. Because that's my job. And so over and over again, people did not respect my boundary because they can't carry a boundary for you. That's your job. And until we learn to respect our own boundaries, then we can't really have healthy relationships with other people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
How have you become more comfortable in having those healthy relationships? And I guess what I'm thinking about is, I'm sure that there are very long-term effects, especially in the fact of it's probably harder for someone to build trust with you and to really earn your respect and everything. What has that been like in terms of making sure that you are forming those healthy relationships?
Yeah. Well, so I'll tell you, the first relationship, you know, right after that relationship, of course, was a complete train wreck. And one of the things that would often happen is if he would raise his voice even a little bit, I would immediately like cover my head and cower. And he'd be like, what's going on over here? Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And I realized I just had this deep trauma response, you know, whenever someone would get even a little bit agitated or upset. And so that was something that I really had to look at. And then I had to look at the guilt and the shame pattern that was keeping me stuck in these situations where I didn't feel like I could stand up for myself and set my own boundary because I didn't feel like I was worthy or I didn't feel like my judgment was correct, things like that. And so what I had to do there was probably the most difficult and uncomfortable work of my freaking life. Anyone who's been through recovery of any kind of addictive pattern, knows that uncomfortable work is a really big part of what you have to do. I always say, you know, nothing's going to make you feel better except doing the work. Go do the work. And it's so true. So the work that I had to do was I had to sit down and write out in a notebook by hand everything that I had ever done in a relationship that I knew to be unethical. Just setting aside everything that had happened to me, right? What had I done that I knew in my heart was not the right thing to do? And to confront it fully. No justifications, no rationalizations, no, oh, I did that because he did this. Just look at it. This is what happened. And after I had gone through that experience, I was finally able to start forgiving myself, because there it all was. And I could look at it and go, okay, this is everything that happened, and just show myself some compassion around that, right? And to then recognize, well, if I caused all of that negative stuff, I could probably cause some really positive stuff too. And to start to actually trust myself as a potential partner for someone. And that was really the first step toward having a healthy relationship, was just loving myself and trusting myself and respecting my own boundaries.
You mentioned earlier the book, Melting Ivory, Life Happens For You, Not To You. You said that was released recently?
Yeah, I just actually... I just published it about a month ago, and it was, you know, this is 20 years in the making. All of this happened to me, you know, happened to you, you hear that? All of this happened for me 20 years ago, and it took me 20 years to have enough distance on it to write a book about it and be able to talk about it like this. So, you know, if you hear that, like, I'm a little bit glib about it, it's because I spent 20 years of work. I spent 20 years of, you know, facing up to that trauma, crying in therapy, crying with friends, grieving, getting through that process and getting onto the other side of it, where I finally was able to look back at it with some humor and some lightness, because it did happen for me. It brought me to this place where I am now, where I have this incredible marriage that I don't... You know, I know very few people who have a marriage like I do. And so I think you kind of have to go through some serious stuff to get to the point where you can have that kind of really vulnerable, open heart connection with someone and still have your boundaries intact. It is a delicate balance to find.
So in high school, I'll admit, instead of using Cliff Notes, I used Spark Notes a lot, because I felt like Spark Notes was a better version for me of to get an idea of the books that I was supposed to read that I didn't AP language. Sorry, Mr. Dupe. So give me a quick, like a Spark Notes version of what readers could expect from your book.
Absolutely. So the book takes place in 1999 and 2000, when I was on a Fulbright to go to West Africa and study theater, basically, in French, in a place called Côte d'Ivoire, or Ivory Coast. And so when I got there, I thought at first that I was going to be, you know, living with this theater troupe and traveling around and doing all these different plays in French, and it was going to be really exciting and politically engaged, and it didn't work out that way at all. So this is the story of what actually happened. This was the most politically stable area in the region when I got there. By the time I left, it was in the middle of a civil war. When I showed up, I thought, again, I was going to be living in an apartment. I ended up living in a household with basically a bunch of members of the troop, and I had to live by their rules. And I discovered very quickly that being a woman in Africa means something very different than being a woman here. And that I did not have the same freedoms. I did not have the same expectations that I'm used to here. And there was a huge cultural adjustment that needed to be made in order to survive there. And so I found myself doing things that were really uncomfortable for me. I found myself having to take on some attributes that I wasn't very proud of and wasn't very happy with, just to kind of fit in and get by. And I ended up in a relationship that was kind of a forbidden relationship due to the circumstances, as I described. And because of that, we really trauma bonded over all of the craziness that happens during that time. And so when we left the country together, we had to escape the country together, I felt really obligated to make it work. And so what the thrust of the story really is that descent into an abusive relationship after that trauma bonding experience that we went through together, and me over and over again kind of missing the red flags and not getting myself out when I could have. And then eventually recognizing that I had to get out or I was going to die, and then doing just that.
Well, you know, I was looking on Amazon at your book before we started talking everything today. And so I hit the look inside to kind of take a look at the book a little bit. And I think, if you don't mind, if I can just read a little bit from the introduction. Please. That I really liked. I think that this was, for me, before we started, this was a very good description. It says, it's part memoir, part travel journal, part Sturm and Undrag. Thank you. Romance and part abusive relationship survival guide, but above all, it's a coming of age tale. And I think that was very powerful to me because it sounds like it completely sums up the entire book in a sentence, which is crazy and hard to do with with anything, I feel like, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes it very difficult, honestly, to pick the genre, though. I mean, it's a memoir, obviously, but not every place, you know, has memoir listed as one of the options, and nonfiction just doesn't seem to really, you know, capture the esprit of the book. So it's been kind of a fascinating exercise, actually, for me to have to pick a genre for this book.
Something you probably thought you'd never have to do.
Exactly. Pick a genre for your life. Right. What genre is your life? Like, oh.
Yeah, I guess it's really what you're doing. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So while we're on the topic of the book, obviously I still have a few more questions for you, but I always like to ask while I'm on the topic, otherwise I'm going to forget. If people want to support you, if they want to check out the book, how can they do so?
Well, you can find the book on Amazon. It will actually be free next week, starting June, I think it's the 29th, Monday through Friday. It will be free, so you can download it for free during that time. The only thing I would ask is please leave a review, because reviews are super duper duper important to new authors like myself. Other than that, you can find me at thatsalloud.com. And there you can find my podcast and everything else I do.
Awesome. So I have a few Trent Speaks related questions for you.
Yes.
So I've got three of them here that I always enjoy asking. The first one that I've started to ask really just this week is, what is it that you've learned about yourself?
So many things. I have learned that I deserve compassion, just like everybody else does. And that if I treat myself the way I would treat a loved one, the way I would treat a best friend, my life goes much better in all the ways. So I got to let myself off the hook. And I think we all do.
What would you say has been the most impactful event or moment that's either shaped who you are today or gotten you to where you are today?
Gosh, I mean, this whole book, really.
Yeah.
But I'll give you one little vignette, okay, that happens in the book that was a huge turning point for me. And in a lot of ways, kind of the moment where I feel like I grew up. Like, not everyone can pinpoint that moment, but I can. This is the moment I became an adult. So like I said, I wasn't supposed to be seeing this boy that I was seeing. And so I snuck out of the house to go and see him. And it just happened to be during a coup d'etat. Oops. So the government had fallen. The military had taken over. And I sort of knew this, but I didn't really understand the full extent of what was going on. And so I went out and I'm walking down this street that I'd often walked down before, but it was, you know, pretty quiet that day, not too many people out because apparently there was a couvre-feu, a curfew. and so I'm walking and I see this flatbed truck come around the corner covered in military dudes, soldiers, and they've got their shirts stripped off and they've got, you know, like out of a bad movie, they've got the like bullet strings across their chest, like Miss America. And they've got their AK-47s and they're shooting them in the air. And they're coming towards me and it's just such strong cognitive dissonance while I'm watching this happen that it really doesn't feel real to me. So it's just kind of exciting at first because I'm looking at this like, I have never seen anything like this before. This is crazy. I can't believe I'm here to witness this. And then somebody yelled out Ajua, which was my African name. And a lot of people knew it back then because I was on TV a bunch. I became kind of a pseudo celebrity while I was there. Long story. and so the president had actually had me dance at a agricultural festival earlier. And so apparently they associated me with the president, but I didn't get that at the time. I just thought, oh, they know who I am. Great. Everybody likes Ajwa, right? Meanwhile, I notice, they're turning their guns toward me. And it is at this point that I start to think, maybe this is not going to go the way you think it's going to go. And I see the boy that I'm not supposed to be seeing running towards me, but he's way too far away to get to me in time. And so I just sort of stand there like a deer in headlights, panicking, not knowing, you know, there's no place to hide at this point. They're almost, you know, they're almost right there. And I see the gunshots kind of pinging off the ground. And then somebody grabs me from behind and pushes me down onto the ground and gets on top of me. And I can kind of feel the weight of his body and like smell his sweat. And that's when I really start to panic because getting shot at is something that I just had no context for. Getting raped, on the other hand, that was something I knew. And I was just starting to think, my God, what a horrible traumatic thing for this guy who's standing here watching me get raped in front of him. When I realized, no, he's not raping me. He's saving my life. This total stranger has laid himself on top of me and is sheltering me with his body from these bullets. And I only had long enough to kind of have that thought before the truck had passed. And then he got up and basically disappeared. I never saw his face, so I have no idea where he went after that. Just disappeared. And I still have a little bit of shrapnel in my thigh, but that's it. I did not get shot that day. And I have no idea if he did or not. But it was one of those incredible moments where I realized, you know, these guys that I thought would be on my side were my enemy. And this total stranger who I thought was attacking me was my savior. And I found that, you know, for the rest of the book, that's kind of a recurrent theme, is that we really don't know who to trust a lot of the time in life. And so we have to trust ourselves. We have to trust our gut. We have to trust our intuition. And we have to protect ourselves as best we can. And, you know, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, but as soon as they show me who they are, I now believe them the first time.
Well, you know, I have to ask because you brought it up. Now I need to know about this pseudo celebrity thing.
Okay, so basically, I was the white girl, you know, I was the token white girl in this
African
country. And so I was performing with a lot of different, well, actually just with a couple of different troops in Côte d'Ivoire. And so when I would go on the TV, it was like, who's that? You know, just catching people's attention immediately. Who the heck is that? I was like the where's the beef lady, right? It was just this weird sort of novelty that everybody knew about me. And so I started showing up in the tabloids. And it was such a strange experience to have strangers think they know about your life. And to come up to you and give you advice about stuff that you don't even, that isn't really happening, right? And that you haven't read, you don't know what they're even referring to. Like, oh, I don't think you should be seeing so-and-so from Magic System. I don't think he's the right boy for you. Like, I don't know who you're talking about.
But okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate the advice. And, you know, it's like, When you're a celebrity, and it's weird to put myself in that category, honestly, but I think this is the closest that I'll ever probably come to that. It's like people have had you in their living room, you know? And so it's very intimate for them. They feel like they know you. And so they'll just come right up to you and try to touch you and talk to you and get your autograph and get your advice. And, you know, it's a very odd thing. And it, especially being, you know, white in a very black area, I stuck out like a sore thumb. And so I couldn't really hide anywhere. You couldn't, like, you know, wear the sunglasses and right. like, blend in. I couldn't go incognito anywhere. And so it was just constant. It was just a constant bombardment and no, you know, privacy or private life. And that was actually what really convinced me, hey, fame, maybe not all it's cracked up to be. I think I'm okay with just being, you know, well-liked among a group of people.
Yeah. It's a fun story, though, that you have to tell from.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I was in a music video that actually was pretty popular. And people who are from West Africa will often know of this kind of famous music video. And it is on my YouTube channel, if anybody wants to look it up.
Oh, awesome. Now you know I'm going to go check that out afterwards.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
Because why
wouldn't
I?
There's a link to it on my website. So
perfect. So the last question I always ask people is probably one of my favorite questions. Not one of. It is my favorite question. What is it that, whether it's something we've talked about in the last half hour or so, or maybe it's something that hasn't been talked about, but what do you want to leave people with? What is it that you want people who listen to this podcast to take away?
That it all starts with self-love and self-compassion. The road to healing always starts there. And you can hem and haw and try to dance around it and buy this and do that and do all kinds of crazy machinations, go through projects, go through programs, you know, get a guru. You can read all the books. You can do all the things. You're still going to have to love yourself. You cannot get around that. And it is amazing sometimes how difficult a task that can be. It sounds incredibly simple. It is the hardest thing you will ever do. To actually love and forgive yourself and radically accept yourself. I talk a lot about radical self-acceptance. You can't love yourself 10 years from now. You can't love yourself 10 minutes from now. You can't love a version of you who you used to be. You gotta love you right here, right now. You can only start from where you're at, and you gotta love you right where you're at. And that's where it all starts.
Adrienne, I said it right, right?
You totally did.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story and sharing your book. I'm excited. I'm actually going to post this this week still. Because I want people to have the opportunity to kind of catch the book for that Great. Little free period and everything. And just so they have the chance to kind of take a look at it and stuff. So awesome. Seriously, thank you so much for coming on. My favorite thing to do here at the end is to really turn it over to you. You get to do your own sign off, whatever you want it to be.
I love it.
For your episode of the podcast.
Well, Trent, thank you so much for having me on here. And thank you for doing this work as someone who also has a podcast that is just about getting people to tell their stories. I really feel like this is very important work. So thank you for doing the work. And I just want to say to everybody out there, a story stuck inside of you colors everything you do, whether you realize it or not. A story that you pull outside of yourself and show to the world can be a beacon of hope for everyone.